everyone. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, with an audio update for the Mindful Wealth subscribers. This is a free update, and what I'm going to share with you here is an outlook on 2009, how it might affect your finances. We'll look at what's working, in other words, which companies and which industries are doing well in 2009. We'll also look at what industries are doing poorly and what professions might be a bad idea for you. There's some professions that you probably don't want to be involved with in 2009 because they're not doing very well. Also, we will look at how the new administration in Washington might affect finances in 2009. So we've got Obama in the White House now, and this is not going to be a political discussion of whether or not I like or hate Obama or Bush. This is going to be a focus on what are the implications of Obama coming into the White House. And there are some good and there are some bad, and maybe even some disastrous. We'll talk about those. And also, we'll talk a little bit about the banking system. But let's start with an issue that may not be on your minds as much as it should be, and that's the oil price situation. If you recall, oil prices were through the roof 6 months ago. But suddenly, for some mysterious reason, they dropped, and they have remained extremely low for some time now. I'm here to warn you that this is a temporary situation, in my view. And, oh, by the way, the disclaimer in all of this is that all of this is just my opinion, and I'm not your financial advisor and not attempting to be your financial advisor. You should always make financial decisions with the help of a qualified professional advisor. All I'm offering here is just some observations, and this information is offered at your own risk. Use it or ignore it. It's your choice. Just giving it to you how I see it. Back on oil prices now. Here's the situation. The oil prices are being suppressed. And here's why. This is a strategic move on the part of Western powers to destroy the economic base of countries like Iran and Venezuela that depend very, very heavily on oil exports for their economic activity. The U.S. has realized that it cannot afford to have a war with Iran. I mean, I don't mean that metaphorically. I mean that literally, bottom line dollars. It can't afford to pay for a war with Iran. So what's the next best option if you're trying to destroy a country? Well, strategically, there are a lot of things you can do. One of them is to destroy the country's economic base. And by lowering and keeping oil prices artificially low for a prolonged period of time, you can create a lot of economic instability in Iran and in Venezuela and in a lot of countries that are, in fact, enemies of the U.S., at least from the point of view of some of the people who work in Washington, let's say. They're not enemies of us, the people. They're enemies of the strategists up high who don't want those countries to be successful or powerful or whatever. So they simply try to destroy them economically. You might ask, well, how could they possibly accomplish this? How do you keep oil prices artificially low? And the answer is that you convince your oil pumping partners around the world to pump a whole lot of extra oil so that you raise supply, which causes prices to plummet. And that's exactly what's happening. The U.S. is, in fact, working with oil suppliers around the world, even some in Indonesia, for example, and pumping a lot of extra oil out of the ground and flooding the market with cheap oil at prices that are causing a lot of economic devastation in countries that happen to be strategic enemies or political enemies of the United States. Now, the important part in all of this, if you agree with this theory, is that this can only be continued for a short period of time. You can't keep oil prices suppressed forever. Eventually, oil will go up in price, because the manipulation is, in essence, expensive to conduct. So oil prices will rebound back to normal supply and demand levels. And those levels probably put a barrel of oil much closer to $100 a barrel than where it is right now, which is well under $50 a barrel. So I think we could easily see oil going back up to 100. And of course, long term, it's going to go to 150, to 200, to 250. And this is inevitable. But those price levels may be a few years off. The important thing to realize is that gas is cheap now. Don't get used to it. Don't go out and buy yourself a Hummer or an SUV or an RV just because oil is cheap right now. Don't get used to it. And by the way, the economy is going to get clobbered yet again when oil prices rebound. And I'm looking at that to happen either beginning in late 2009 or sometime in the first half of 2010. That's when it's likely to start rebounding in terms of the oil prices. And remember, too, that rising oil prices put a lot of people out of business in the U.S., and they make food expensive, and they make travel expensive. They make everything expensive, farming, agriculture. So when oil prices go back up again, it's going to be combined, that inflationary pressure, I should say, is going to be combined with the monetary inflation pressure that's being caused by the Federal Reserve's creation of trillions of dollars of new money, you know, money out of thin air. So think about that. When oil rebounds, you've got price inflation caused by this commodity going up, combined with the monetary inflation caused by the Fed. This is almost a perfect storm for runaway inflation. So the threat of runaway inflation or hyperinflation has not passed at all. You could perhaps say we are in the eye of the storm. There is a perception of calm right now based on the suppression of oil prices, which tends to bring a lot of prices down. But that perception is, in my opinion, going to be quite short-lived. And in the medium term, let's say in a year and a half to 2 years, we could see all kinds of runaway inflation happening in this country. It could even begin sooner than that. I've predicted price inflation of as much as 40%. By the end of 2009 versus late 2008 prices. So we'll see if that actually begins to take shape. Now moving on to the banking system. The banking system is still in big, big trouble. This should be evident to anyone who's been following the situation. Citibank almost failed. Bank of America almost failed. The name now of the bank is quite accurate because the Bank of America is now owned in large part by Uncle Sam. It should be called America's Bank because we own it now. Well, not we. I guess the people in Washington own it, but they're going to send us the bill for buying it. So we paid for it, but they own it. The banking system is a big risk. It remains a big risk. Even though it's FDIC insured, it will be to your advantage to diversify your investments. Don't hold all your money in one bank or even in one investment firm. In fact, there was a lot of buzz recently about vegetarian author John Robbins losing his family fortune with the Madoff investment scam. And when I pointed out that, you know, this was a bad investment decision on the part of John Robbins, I actually took some criticism for that. People said, no, it wasn't a bad investment decision. It was him being ripped off. Well, actually, it was a bad investment decision. Anyone who puts all their money in one place, not being very wise, in my opinion, especially given the warning signs that have been evident for many, many months. Any of us could lose any one institution on any given day. It could happen tomorrow. You could wake up and one of the banks that you have your money in could be gone, or one of the investment firms or brokerage houses or wherever you put your money in, it could be gone. The country you invested in could cease to exist. You know, that looks to be a possibility of the situation in Iceland, for example. That country's bankrupt. The government has actually failed in Iceland because of the riots that happened after the people were wiped out by the financial implosion, the banking system collapse, riots in the streets. Government stepped down. They called for a general election, said, okay, we give up, we step down, we're going to let new people come into power and try to clean this up. Well, that could happen anywhere. So putting all your money in one place is very naive, in my opinion, for anyone to do that. You've got to diversify your investments, and it also means diversifying them in terms of currencies. So you can't have everything just in dollars or just in euros or even in gold, for example. That would be a mistake too. You need to diversify and have some stocks with some quality companies that will survive. You need to have some physical precious metals. You need to have some currency. But most importantly, as I mentioned before, I think you need to have your own business, your own income stream. I continue to encourage people to do that because the layoffs are now so widespread. I mean, Microsoft has started laying people off. Starbucks has announced another 1,000 layoffs as of today. That's from their corporate headquarters. They're closing stores all across the country. Every retailer is threatened. We're looking at a world now, or at least a nation, where 25% of the retailers that you know, the big box stores and those that are in the malls, for example, 25% of those retailers could fail in the next 3 to 4 years. That's amazing. One out of four retailers could fail. I hope the number's not that high, but even conservative estimates put it at 10%, one out of every 10. And with those failures comes a lot of job loss. So jobs are being lost everywhere, even in places that people never could have predicted job losses. And that means that if you depend on someone else for your income, then potentially you're subject to having that income just cut off all of a sudden. So it's to your advantage to make sure you A, diversify your income and your savings, and B, have an income stream that you control that you can't be fired from, even if it's just a backup income, a part-time income, kind of an emergency revenue stream that you could get by on if you had to. It's a good idea to have something like that in place. So the bottom line on the banking system is that it's in trouble. We're not through this storm yet, not even close. And in fact, some of the policies that Obama is talking about putting into place sound very, very concerning to anyone who has actually studied economics, fiscal policy, the implications of carrying a lot of debt. For example, Obama has promised years of trillion-dollar deficits. We've never had a trillion-dollar deficit before in this country until 2008. And even that was just astounding. Jaws dropped all across Washington to realize that, my gosh, we're spending our way into oblivion faster and faster. Well, Obama's talking about running trillion-dollar deficits year after year after year. Well, you think about this. The U.S. right now owes about $10 trillion. So after one more year, it'll owe not only the interest on the debt of the $10 trillion, which is probably about, what, $700 billion or so, if you consider a 7% interest rate that it's paying. And maybe it's only paying 6%, so call it $600 billion. But you also have to account for the $1 trillion in additional debt spending that's taking place during that year. So in 1 year, the national debt goes from $10 trillion to $11.6 trillion. That's in 1 year. And you start doing that math. Let's say you're spending an extra $1 trillion every year, and you have a 6 or 7% interest rate that you're paying on the existing debt. You are going to double your debt very rapidly. Let's see, without the debt spending. In other words, if the budget were balanced tomorrow and we were just paying the interest on the debt, the national debt would double in, what, about 10 to 12 years, depending on that interest rate. That's the rule of 72, by the way, if those of you are keeping track of that, which tells you that if you have a 7% interest rate, for example, your debt's going to double in 10 years. If you have a 6% interest rate, then it's going to double in 12 years. So the debt's going to double in about a decade, even if we balance our budget. But our budget isn't even close to being balanced. We're going to run an additional trillion-dollar deficits every year for the next few years. So you can see that very rapidly, this starts to accumulate a national debt of 15 trillion, 20 trillion, 25 trillion. I mean, within a few years, the numbers just become so astronomical and so outrageous that no one in their right mind would loan money to America. That's the scenario that all the people in Washington are really afraid of. And in that scenario, whenever that trigger happens, when the foreign nationals stop buying U.S. debt, that's when the printing presses are just cranked up to full speed. That's when the Fed just goes crazy, starts printing money, because it will have to print money to buy all the debt that the foreign countries are no longer willing to buy. And so then in that scenario, instead of debt being bought by foreign countries that actually have savings or real wealth to buy the debt with, the Federal Reserve will be buying debt with fictitious money. And that is, again, a perfect storm for hyperinflation. So be very aware of that. Now, there's a possibility that all of this spending by Obama might somehow work out. Let's just say, for example, let's imagine an outcome in which all of this spending is done in the right way. It's an investment in America. That's the way it's being sold, of course. It's an investment in America. We're going to rebuild the roads and the bridges and the schools. We're going to rebuild America by spending this $1 trillion a year. Well, there's certainly a good argument in that that could, in fact, make America more competitive, that it could position America as having a brighter economic future. It's kind of like investing in a business that pays off long term. You could say, okay, we're investing in America and it's going to pay off, and then we'll balance the budget down the road. Well, that's been what every politician has said for the last several decades. We spend money now and it'll pay off in the future. The problem is the future never comes. There is no balanced budget in America's future, no matter who's in charge. And you know why? Because the voters won't stand for it. The voters won't elect somebody that tells them the truth. Right? The voters won't elect anybody that gets up on the platform and says, "Okay, I'm running for president, and I got some good news and some bad news for you. Good news is I'm going to tell you the truth. Bad news is we're broke, and you're all going to have to pay about 95% tax rates for a couple of years to get us back to just break even. From there, we hope to grow the economy." I mean, no one's going to elect a politician that tells the truth. Won't happen in any democracy. The voters want to be lied to. They really do. And they are consistently lied to by politicians from both sides of the aisle. They tell the voters what they want to hear. And the voters don't want to hear about budget cuts. They don't want to hear about cuts in entitlement programs, cuts in education. And I don't want to hear about cuts in education either, you know? None of us do. So we don't vote for politicians that promise cuts and a reduction in the economy, the reduction of wealth creation. We vote for politicians that promise expansion. Let's expand, let's spend more, print more, go into debt more, build more, do more, hire more. And that's what people voted for, and that's what they're getting. But unfortunately, it's a huge risk because if that investment doesn't pay off, then the nation will be hopelessly bankrupt. Now, if it does pay off, then even then, it'll still probably take us a generation just to pay off the debt. And that's even if the politicians are looking at paying off the debt. And I haven't seen them talk about paying off any debt. No one's talking about the national debt. Wasn't even an issue during the last election. So what does all of this have to do with your mindful wealth in 2009? Well, if you want to have any wealth left in 2009, you obviously got to not lose it. And 2009 is a year where a lot of people are going to lose a whole lot of money in various ways. You know, some people are going to be scammed, like Robbins was. Some people are going to lose it due to currency problems, currency devaluation. Some people are going to lose money because they get laid off or their company fails. You know, the auto industry is a good example of that. But a lot of people are going to be well protected, and those are the people like you who are mindful about what's really going on. You know, don't listen to the mainstream news. They're never going to tell you the truth about this. They're not interested in really educating you. They're interested in entertaining you and getting your eyeballs glued to the screen so they can sell commercial time. And typically, that process has nothing to do with telling you what's true. Because if people knew that, gee, wow, this is really happening, they might not even watch TV. They might be out burying their gold or something. Who knows? Now, there's some good news, by the way, about what's happening in 2009, and the good news is in the area of natural health. Here's something very interesting. I spoke to a lot of owners of various supplement companies and superfood companies in the first 2 weeks of January 2009, and I asked them, how's business? How are things going? Turns out that even though October, November, and December were quite bad across the board, January came back really strong. even more than you might expect just from the seasonal variation. Every January is good, but this January was even better than could be expected based on the downturns that happened in the fourth quarter of calendar 2008. So January was very good for these companies. Many of them experienced a doubling of sales from November, for example. Doubling of sales. That's projected because January isn't even over yet as at the time that I'm recording this, but just based on the first 2 weeks, they sold, for example, a month's worth of health-related products. So it's very interesting to see this because almost everything else in America is, in fact, going down. The pharmaceutical industry is imploding. The car companies, of course, sales are way, way down. Lots of things are down. Retailing is down. There are very few things that are maintaining their revenues. There are some entertainment industries that are doing pretty well. Hollywood is still doing okay, the movie theaters. The video game industry is still doing okay, but of course they benefited from a very strong Christmas season. But the health industry is absolutely booming. And I think this is a major trend that we're starting to see unveiled. And this does, in my view, have something to do with the Obama administration and the fact that probably the FDA's war on censorship of nutritional supplements is just about going to end. Not by their choice, but by the grassroots efforts combined with a new face in the White House who's allied a lot more with natural health than the pharmaceutical industry. And in fact, the lawyers, the whole legal lobby that supports the Democratic Party is very much against Big Pharma. And they want to be able to sue the drug companies on behalf of consumers who were harmed by those products. So the prospects for Big Pharma look really bad, while at the same time, the prospects for health-related products look really good. So this is one implication of the Obama victory or the Obama administration that is really important to note, which is the future now looks quite dim for Big Pharma and very, very good for natural health companies. And this also has implications for health companies that are involved in direct sales or network marketing, like the Amazon Herb Company or the Moxor opportunity that I'm a strong advocate of, and even I'm a top distributor in that company. Also, Monavi will probably benefit from this, even though I don't think their product is that great. But the company as a whole will probably benefit from this trend. In fact, all the companies out there that sell supplements, no matter what marketing model they use, direct sales, network marketing, distribution, health food, you know, health food distribution, whatever they use, they're all going to benefit. And that's actually a really good sign. That's good for the country. The more people invest in nutrition and dietary supplements and disease prevention, the better off we're going to be as a nation long term. We need to get away from the mass medication of our population and move towards the prevention of disease, the nourishment of our population, and towards nutritional literacy or knowledge, empowerment, much of which has been banned by the FDA and the FTC. So we're looking for that to turn around, and it could really happen in the next couple of years, especially given that healthcare reform is on the table, and some of the top people that Obama has brought in to the healthcare, the Health and Human Services Department at the top of the government, some of those people are in fact talking about prevention and talking about shifting the focus of healthcare away from just the treatment of symptoms to the prevention of degenerative disease. Now, so far, we don't know if that's just talk or if it's actually going to come through. So I can't say. I mean, all I can really say is that I'm cautiously optimistic that there might be some shifts in the right direction based on what these people are saying. But I don't trust anybody in Washington, you know, not until I see it happen. So I'm cautious, and I wouldn't be surprised if they come up short and we end up with, you know, some failed reforms. But I'm definitely going to push for reforms because that's what's good for the people. That's what's good for the nation. The future of our country depends on a healthy population. And hopefully we can get some real reforms in place. And that has huge implications for everyone that's in the natural health industry. So to get specific here, my advice to those of you listening is, if you're in nursing, for example, and you're wondering, hey, when might be a good time to get out of nursing and get into natural health or learn how to be a naturopathic physician or a homeopath or a chiropractor or any one of many other professions that are in natural health. It seems like right now is a great time to do that because big pharma is going down and natural health is coming up. I mean, the wave is surging. I'm not just making that up, by the way. Big pharma, for example, a couple of weeks ago, Pfizer laid off 800 scientists. That's interesting for a company that claims to be based on science. They laid off 800 scientists, but no marketers. Got to keep the marketing people on the staff. Got to keep the PR people, the advertising people, and the executives that take home the big paychecks. Who are we going to lay off? I know. Send home the scientists. We don't need those people anyway. Send them home. And that's what they did. 800 scientists, now jobless. And by the way, I wrote an article in late 2008 that made 31 predictions for 2009. Several of them have already come true, which is kind of fun. But one of them was that there'd be a lot of consolidation in the pharmaceutical industry and we'd start seeing mergers and acquisitions. Well, guess what? This just came up on the news today. Pfizer is now doing a deal to acquire Wyeth. And these are two huge pharmaceutical companies. Now, Pfizer's already in trouble laying off scientists. It's got cash crunch problems. But guess what? Looks like they might acquire Wyeth. So we're starting to see a consolidation. Now, with consolidation in any industry, but especially in the pharmaceutical industry, you're going to see a net loss of jobs. So people are going to be exiting that industry in large numbers as more and more of these companies consolidate. We are seeing a massive shrinking of the industry. And think about this too. Big pharma was propped up in large part by the Bush administration policies that favored the drug companies. In fact, the drug companies depend on government for probably, I'm just estimating this, but it's probably about half of their money. The other half comes from insurance companies. These are rough numbers, okay? So it might actually be only 40% or it might be 60%. I'm not sure, but let's say it's roughly half comes from the government that goes to pharmaceutical companies. It's certainly a big, big number. Well, how did Big Pharma get all that money from the government? Typically, it comes from Medicaid and Medicare programs. And in these programs, the drug companies have been criminally overcharging everyone. In fact, virtually every state in the country has sued pharmaceutical companies for price fixing or price fraud. And in almost every case, they settle out of court, so it never becomes a big story in the mainstream media. But it's going on right now. It's something that's rampant in the drug industry. And this was even being done at the national level. Remember when President Bush signed the Medicare prescription drug benefit program with a stipulation in that program that the government could not negotiate price discounts with the drug companies, even though the government was the largest volume buyer. It had to pay full retail price for these drugs. And this was written into law. It actually made it illegal for Big Pharma to give government a discount. And this was, of course, created by the Bush administration and its very cozy relationship with the drug companies. Well, those days are over. And Big Pharma didn't want Obama to win. They wanted Bush to stay in the White House. They wanted things to stay business as usual. But now someone new is in the White House, and they're afraid that the new policies may be quite devastating to the pharmaceutical industry. And I hope they're right about that. I hope that the new policies are devastating to the pharmaceutical industry, because it's an industry of death. It's an industry of the mass chemical contamination of the bodies and minds of the people in our country. And, you know, there are really two camps in the world today, two groups of people. One group of people believes that the answer to our problems is more chemicals. That if we could just drug more people with more pharmaceuticals, everything would be solved. In their minds, the only reason that we're so sick in America today, that we have so much cancer, and so much heart disease, and diabetes, and obesity, and depression, the only reason that's going on to them is because not enough people are medicated yet. Yeah, that's what they believe. That's one camp. Oh, and by the way, they also believe not enough people are eating foods that have been treated with pesticides or fumigated. You know, people need more chemicals in their lives. That's the answer. Better living through chemistry. That says it all. Well, the other group, the opposing group, of which I'm a member, and most likely you are too, believes that, in fact, the answer is fewer chemicals and more nutrition. We got to get the chemicals out of our lives, out of our gardens, out of our homes, out of our yards, out of our bodies and skin and cosmetics and personal care products and laundry detergents and dryer sheets and soap and shampoo and everything. We got to get the chemicals out and bring in the natural stuff. We got to get the chemicals out of the food and out of the medicine for sure. Fewer chemicals will, in fact, provide us with a better, healthier, more productive future. That's what I believe. That's what the natural camp believes. But that camp is at odds with the chemical camp. The chemical camp believes more chemicals is the answer to everything. Well, the chemical camp has lost. It's lost the battle. The experiment is essentially over. I mean, think about it. They've been running this experiment on the United States since about the early 70s, right? Better living through chemistry, pesticides, herbicides, food additives, chemicals, artificial sweeteners, aspartame, MSG, you name it. All this stuff has been happening since the early 70s, and they've had this experiment now for almost 40 years, almost four decades of experimenting on the American people with more chemicals. What's the result of that experiment? Well, look around. The results are quite evident. The worst health the world has ever seen. The worst. More obesity, more depression, more cancer, more diabetes, degenerative disease just rampant in this country. If this were a clinical trial, you'd have to look at the results and say, wow, you know what? These chemicals didn't work. I mean, the results speak for themselves. And in fact, the only people in America today who are healthy are those who are in the natural camp, those who are getting rid of the chemicals and raising their children without vaccines, without fluoride, without medication. They're raising their kids on real foods, superfoods, fresh vegetables right out of a garden, grown organically. Those are the people who are healthy in America today. It's as simple as that. The results speak for themselves. I often use the image of looking at 100 people that walk out of a Walgreens pharmacy versus 100 people that walk out of a Whole Foods store. Which group looks healthier? It's the Whole Foods people are healthier. The people walking out of the pharmacy look terrible. That's because chemicals don't work. Chemicals do not work. More chemicals are not the answer to our nation's problems. And now the Obama administration is creating a window of opportunity for the natural camp to once again have more sway over the population and even more say in the healthcare debate. And this whole healthcare debate issue, this could just be disastrous for the chemical camp. I mean, if healthcare reform is really taken seriously in America, I mean, real hardcore serious reform, if it takes place, the chemical camp is history. The mass medication of the people is not compatible with an affordable, effective healthcare system. You can't create a healthy population and save money by turning to chemicals. It just doesn't work. And in fact, I'm on the record saying that if we don't reform this situation very, very quickly, the U.S. will go bankrupt, the government will fail, and that America has no future unless it can turn this situation around. I mean, no nation that has an unhealthy population has any real future. You've got to create health, maintain it, promote it, teach it, and then you have a chance at having a future as a nation. So right now we've got this interesting opportunity for real change from the top down, and it's just a question of whether this change will really happen. Now, there are varying opinions on what Obama can accomplish or even whether he's genuine or just another puppet president. And, you know, you can decide for yourself what you believe on that. There's no real consensus on it, so let's just look at the range. He could either be, on one side, extremely ineffective, and we'd end up with the status quo situation, hyperinflation, massive bankruptcy, country goes broke in a few years and reboots into something new. Something not called the United States of America anymore. All right, that's one extreme. If Obama fails, I think that's where we're headed. The other extreme is Obama is a raging success, let's say, that he does massive reforms, that this debt spending turns out to be a hugely intelligent investment, in the future of the country, that he reforms healthcare, starts creating incentives for health promotion so that the population starts getting really healthy, and turns this whole thing around. Big pharma is largely put out of business. The natural healthcare products and services and vendors are all booming, and the country is getting healthier and happier and more abundant, and all of that is happening. That's one other extreme. Well, you know what the result of that would be? The surprise result that you may not have thought about? It'd be that people live longer. And when people live longer, guess what? They collect Social Security. And that would cause the country to go bankrupt. So you see, we're in kind of a bind here, aren't we? Right now, the country's going broke because it's treating everybody with health care and killing them too soon. But if we turn to natural health and people lived a really long time, the country would go broke based on the entitlement promises that have been made to the aging population. I even wrote an article about this one time called, It's Patriotic to Kill Yourself, you know, save your country some money by dying before you collect Social Security. Of course, it was a satirical article, just kind of poking fun at it, but it is a real issue. If you look at the government's balance sheets, the U.S. government cannot afford to pay out benefits to a population that lives to an average age of even 75, not to mention 80 or 90, which is very possible if we were to get people onto health foods and superfoods. So I'm skeptical that the government's going to have any kind of real reform that would encourage a lifetime of health and cause huge increases in longevity. Nevertheless, even if Obama is only slightly effective in this, the future looks really bright for natural health. So any vendors, any manufacturers, product companies that are in that space are going to do extremely well in the years ahead, even if there is an economic collapse. You know, people, in fact, are going to be more interested in finding out how to take control over their health if there is a collapse of a government that has typically paid for their health care. You know, there may be a rush towards preventing disease because that's the only option for some period of time. You know, that government safety net might be gone temporarily, and people are going to rush to solutions that put them in charge of their health. Any way that you look at this, natural health is poised to do extremely well. So whether we're talking about information products or even websites like Natural News, or products, services, entire professions, and anyone who serves those professions looks to be doing extremely well in 2009 through 2012, and of course, even beyond. Natural health, it's a whole new era. In other words, we are finishing up an era of suppression, an era of censorship, an era of big pharma domination that tried to put natural health out of business. And that dark chapter of human history is now closing. And it may be closing for another year or even 2 years. I'm not saying it's over. I'm just saying we are in the final days of that dark era. And from that, as we emerge from that, we're going to have an extremely bright future. So getting back to you personally, what does it mean for you? Well, if you're thinking about a new career, this is a good time to learn a service, a skill, a knowledge set that applies to that industry. I think it's a really good time. If you're interested in starting your own business, I think this is a good time to look at businesses that involve natural health products or services or information. As long as you don't spend a fortune up front, don't go spending big money up front because the payoff may be slow in this industry just due to the suppressed economy, right? So don't go spending a fortune on anything, hoping to get it back, thinking that the economy is in a booming scenario, because it's not anywhere close to that. So keep your expenses low, but be part of this emerging wave that's going to create not just economic abundance and business opportunities, but in fact is going to help reform the very future of our nation. We're going to end up healthier, happier, more intelligent, more abundant, all of us, as a result of natural health being more successful and conventional medicine being less successful. So only you can really translate all of that information into what it means for you personally. And I do want to encourage you to move cautiously. Don't quit your day job tomorrow, so to speak. But think about the trends that are happening here and ask yourself where you really want to end up in 5 years. Do you want to be in an industry that you love, that you feel passionate about? This is a good time to think about making that transition, in my opinion. Natural health is going to do very well, and conventional medicine is going to contract. And the population will be increasingly awakened to natural health possibilities. And people who are involved in that awakening, I think, are positioned to do extremely well. I've got one more final thought for you here. I've had people asking me, what do you think about alternative energy, investing in wind farms or, you know, natural renewable energy sources? Well, right now is a bad time to be investing in that, just from a financial perspective, because oil prices are so low. This, of course, will change. As soon as oil prices rebound, I suspect there'd be a huge rebound in the stock prices of renewable energy companies, and in fact, renewed interest in investing in renewable energy. But this is dependent on oil prices rebounding back to at least $80 a barrel. It's better if oil is at $100 a barrel, at least in terms of the renewable energy markets. So the question to ask yourself is, do you believe that oil is going to rebound and be at, let's say, $100 a barrel in the next 2 years? If you believe the answer is yes, then investing in renewable energy sometime before that happens makes a lot of economic sense. A lot of investment sense. If you disagree with that estimation, if you think oil is going to stay at $35 a barrel for 4 years, then obviously you wouldn't want to invest in renewable energy at all, because as long as oil prices stay low, renewable energy is going to perform very, very poorly, and no one's going to want to invest in it either. The success of renewable energy completely depends on high oil prices and sustained high oil prices. So if you see oil prices spiking up and you think it's going to stay there, then yeah, that's a good time to start looking at renewable energy. For me personally, what I'm going to be doing is watching the oil prices and just seeing what happens. If it starts trending upwards, then yeah, I'm going to start to look at renewable energy companies and kind of see what makes sense at that time. Remember though, above all of this is subject to change. I mean, we could have an announcement of bank holidays and gold confiscation, you know, tomorrow. It's all subject to change. This is just based on the best information that I've seen so far. And it's not a perfect crystal ball. I could be wrong on any of these points or even all of them. But so far, I've been pretty much on track with what's happening with this economic situation. Remember, I predicted all this in 2006. In fact, late 2005, I predicted the housing bubble crash. And I predicted the economic implosion that would ensue, and talked about the derivatives problem and so on. But again, nobody's got a crystal ball. I don't either. But I can see that we're not through this financial crisis yet, not even close. I can see that some of what Obama is doing concerns me a lot, the debt spending in particular. And I'm not sure that the cure for a debt problem is more spending. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. On the upside, again, the Obama administration creates a window of opportunity for real healthcare reform that could be a huge boost for the natural health industry. So that's the update for you today. I hope you found this useful. I plan to put out some more updates in time, especially if there are big financial events that occur. I'll send out some more updates. Do your homework on this, folks. If you're working with your life savings, let's say, or just your regular paycheck, these are big, important decisions. Make them from a position of being extremely well-informed and of reducing your risk through various risk reduction strategies, such as diversification of investment. Thanks for listening. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger for Natural News with the Mindful Wealth Update. Take care.